Of party leaders interviews continues today, and this week we're joined by Labour leader and Taoiseach Joan Burton, who's with us in studio. Thanks very much for coming in this afternoon. Can we start actually on that issue, on Aer Lingus, the slots in Heathrow, not to mention the jobs of the people working there and people on the Western Seaboard concerned about the connectivity from Shannon to Dublin to a major international hub. What are the core concerns of government looking at this as a shareholder?
Well, the important issues for this country is that direct connections, airline connections in and out of Ireland are critically important for investment in the country, in the sense of investors being able to come in directly, both to and from the UK and Europe, but also obviously from America. Secondly, tourism, direct flights in and out of Ireland, very important for tourism, and tourism has, as you know, picked up very strongly in the last few years. And in general, what people call technically connections, connectivity, is of vital importance to people in Ireland in terms of their connections around the world, and we've been able to come and go from Ireland to different parts of the world. But it's equally important for investment into the country and for areas like tourism, and obviously as well for exports.
But in terms of the slots in Heathrow, what's the government's attitude towards the slots in Heathrow? Is it seeking a particular time guarantee on them? I mean, people we've been speaking to say a 5-year guarantee might be part of that. Would that be enough for the government?
Well, this issue of a possible bid by IAG for Aer Lingus has come up before, and we won't actually know until tomorrow what the actual position is, because obviously this is a matter for the company and the board in the first instance. But certainly what we will want to do as a government, and what's absolutely important, is to protect the slots and, as I said, the connections of direct flights in and out to Ireland. And the flights into Heathrow are of enormous value to Ireland for the reasons I've just said, for business, for ease of travelling, and also as well, a lot of people from different parts of England come into Dublin and Shannon to take flights to the States because of the availability of pre-clearance facilities in Ireland. So it's very, very important, and that will be absolutely foremost in the government's mind in terms of Aer Lingus as the as a really significant airline and the national airline until we have Ryanair as well.
Sure. But just before we leave this, when you say protect the slots, when you say protect the slots, what do you mean by that?
Well, we don't know what the details of this offer are yet. Okay. So speculation on that at this point, Colin, would be premature. But what we have said when previous offers were indicated in relation to Aer Lingus, that was a critical issue for the government, but just also for the country.
OK, well, turning to matters political and indeed your own party, your colleague Jed Nash was out yesterday speaking to Saturday with Claire Byrne, and he said he broadly agrees with Jack O'Connor on the idea of the replacement of the USC in time with something else. Is that something that the party as a whole shares? What would you like to see it reduced by, and what revenue stream would you like to see it?
Well, I think it's no secret, Colm, that in the budget for 2015, and the structure of that budget was agreed largely between myself and the Taoiseach in July after I became Labour leader. It's no secret that I put down a marker to say that I wanted to see the USC reformed. And I'm delighted to say that we've begun that process. And I think one of the reasons that Labour Party people have quite a lot of pep in their step since the new year began is that as we speak, workers across the country are seeing the benefit of Labour's input into the budget, where USC is being reduced. 80,000 people were lifted out of it, and the two lower rates have been reduced. And then we've also had positive income tax changes for workers. The entry point at which people go into the higher tax rate has gone
but
up.
But it's worth a significant amount in terms of other things
it's
people want to do in terms
amount,
of services and everything else. So if you do want to reduce it more, what are you going to bring in to replace
it? Yeah, it's worth a huge amount. It's worth over $4 billion in terms of the inflow of taxes and income into the government. So anything that happens in relation to this has to be in the context of further growth and expansion in employment. And in a certain sense, it's very simple. If somebody who today is unemployed goes into a job tomorrow, basically, they're no longer on social welfare for the most part. And secondly, they begin to to pay some PRSI, some tax, and significantly they pay USC.
Okay, now, but just to be clear on that, as more people get back to work, more people are paying into that, and there's revenue taken in from other areas as well. There's scope to reduce the USC. But are you saying that there will be no other taxation or revenue raising measure to raise that which has been raised by the USC?
No,
or are you saying you're going to just let growth take care of cuts to the USC?
What I'm saying, Colm, is that in building and rebuilding Ireland into a really successful modern economy with employment for as many people as possible, we have to look, in fact, at all of taxation. And in fact, in each budget, we have been able to do that. But this year in this budget, we've been able to put an extra billion into the economy between tax and social welfare changes. And the USC has been an important component. No one could say, Colm, and I want to be clear about this, that they could abolish the USC or reduce it absolutely overnight. What can happen is it can be done in stages as part of the broader set of reforms to keep Ireland working and get more people in Ireland working.
But just to be clear on that, and we will get on to jobs just after this, to be clear on that, you're looking for growth to reduce, you're looking for growth as the revenue raising measure that allows you to cut the universal social charge. You're not talking about bringing in taxation elsewhere or other forms of progressive taxation.
Well, you see, the way we have reformed this economy and turned it around, rolled up our sleeves, got down to work, has been to get people back to work, to get more new businesses started. That's why I pointed
Is it growth alone you're looking for?
No, it's always going to be a mixture of different things. And what one has to do in relation to the whole tax structure is have a look and see when people sit down at the kitchen table, say we're talking about, say, a woman going out to work and she's two children, and she's paying childcare costs. When you look at the tax system, you have to look at what's the story for the ordinary worker and the average family in terms of when they have the discussion around the kitchen table. That's the core to how we build a budget.
But we
also have to talk then to people to go back to work, and we also have to talk to business people and individuals.
Going back to work there, and you mentioned a woman sitting at her kitchen table thinking about going back to work. What about a lone parent sitting at their kitchen table and their child is seven and they're thinking about going back to work? You made a commitment, I think, well over 2.5 years ago at this stage, that by the end of that year, there would be a Scandinavian standard childcare system in place before it was countenanced that the lone parent allowance would be stopped at age seven. What happened to the Scandinavian childcare system?
And what we have done, and it's really important, if you look at the recent figures from the CSO about standards of income and living in Ireland, it shows that in the current material, which was produced this week, which is for, by the way, the second half of 2012 and the first half of 2013, is that the key thing in terms of getting people out of poverty is to get into employment. And lone parents are the group, one of the groups most at risk of being poor.
And childcare is one of the barriers.
And
so what happened to the Scandinavian childcare system?
Well, I've been working with the Department of Children. We've been transferring resources to the Department of Children to get a much better childcare system in this country at an affordable price for families, for parents.
When will that be in place?
Well, it is improving and has been improving as we speak, but we have a lot more to do. I've made no secret of the fact that, for instance, if Labour is in government, in the next government, I want to actually see a second year of free.
Sure, but the idea that a Scandinavian standards childcare system would be in place before the lone parent payment would be stopped for children at age seven.
I think if you have a look at the detail of what I said was we have a situation in Ireland, which thankfully is now changing, where a lot of lone parents ended up locked out of working and employment. And we've created a structure where we put the emphasis first, after the child is 7 years of age, on a transition system. It's a transition system to job seekers, where first of all, the emphasis is hugely on going back to education, into education and training, so that the lone parent, the person parenting on their own, can get a well-paid job and get a qualification. Okay. So it's a two-step and it's a transition system. Okay. And that's what's been put into place. And can I say, it works very well for an awful lot of lone parents who okay. are very successful in terms of work and employment.
There seems to be some confusion at government level about how many people lost their jobs during the recession. The Taoiseach last week said that the goal was that all of the 250,000 jobs that were lost during the recession would be restored by 2018. In the government's medium-term economic strategy from December 2013, it says 330,000 jobs were lost during the recession. What happened to the 80,000 jobs in the medium-term economic strategy?
Well, this year, as you know, and last year, sorry, 2014.
No, just the difference in the figures as opposed to the job recovery. What was the difference in the target?
I think you're going to have to get one of the statistical people in to actually advise you on that.
But I'm asking you, it's a government announcement. A medium-term economic strategy said that 330,000 jobs were lost yes. during the recession between 2008 and 2012.
Yes.
The Taoiseach says that 250,000 jobs were lost during the recession and they'll be restored. So how many jobs are going to be in place by 2018? 330,000 or 250,000? Well, what benchmark should people hold you to?
Well, the benchmark that's being looked for at the moment and what we have actually delivered on, so it's there. It's not a notion. It's what we delivered this year. In 2014, we delivered 40,000 additional jobs. We're setting the target at least the same. And the consistent target that was used at the beginning of the life of the government was to say by 2016 we would have 100,000 additional people back at work, and we actually have that. Let me say as well,
just in terms of targets, because people are obviously making up their minds, the Taoiseach has, I suppose, fired a starting pistol on getting people thinking about the next election by saying that it would come down to a choice between Fine Gael and Sinn Féin, and we can get into that in a moment. But one of the targets you'll be held to is the promises that are made. So the Taoiseach says 250,000 jobs were lost during the recession, a year after the government announces 330,000 jobs were lost during the recession. So what's the
and
target
it depends
people should judge
on the
you by?
Years that you're using, how many.
So last week, was the Taoiseach using a more advantageous group of years?
No, I wouldn't think so at all. Actually, the key figure column and the one to actually, if you like, rate the government on is how many people went back to work. And as I speak, 1.9 million people at the end of 2014 were back at work. And an easy way to remember that is 1916. At the height of the recession in Ireland, the number of people in work fell to 1.826 million. That means that all of those people, families, whole families, individuals, the lone parents you're talking about, lots of people lost their jobs. What we have done now is brought that back up to 1.916 million. And our target is to go to 2.1 million and to have full employment, or to bring it back to the 2.1 million by 2018. Faster, so by the way, than we originally said. So we're actually slightly ahead of the target. But I have to say, we're not resting on our laurels, because we've huge amounts still to do on that.
You mentioned that yourself and the Taoiseach had sat down before the budget. You'd been critical previously about the structure under which budgets and economic decisions were made at government. You described the Economic Management Council as secretive and missing the big picture. What changed with that, apart from the fact that you became a member of it? What changed with the Economic Management Council?
Well, if you actually looked at my detailed comments, I said the picture I felt that was not being reflected on sufficiently was that the fact that the big spending ministries, social welfare, health and education, and indeed the Department of the Environment and Housing, were not involved. And I felt there was a risk, based on studies of economic management committees in other countries, that was a risk. Because remember, at the end of the day, in trying to get Ireland into recovery, what I was concerned about in terms of being Minister for Social Protection was that we would protect the social welfare system, particularly people like our pensioners, but that we would focus on getting people back to work. What I was worried about, to be honest, was that these issues would not be discussed sufficiently. Can I just say, since I've joined the group and we've had a number of meetings, on the first couple of meetings, we had both the Minister for the Environment in the context of housing and the Minister for Communications at the meetings in order to get a detailed brief. And the style has changed somewhat now, where in fact ministers with line responsibilities, particularly the big spending ministries, which are the engine of public service in Ireland, health, education, social welfare, where it's appropriate, they will be brought into the discussions.
Okay, can I ask you for one more firm target then? In terms of house building, social housing delivery, by the time of the next election, how many social houses will have been built in Ireland, do you think?
Well, we have the targets which have been set out, which are very ambitious. A 2.2 billion programme, which is set to produce an extra 35,000 houses through a variety of mechanisms. And what we're focusing on now, and what Minister Alan Kelly is working on specifically over the next few weeks, is setting in place through each local county council right around the country a reporting mechanism of how people are meeting the targets, because it is difficult to actually get major house building started. You may have to do planning, you may even have to do zoning, then you have to do the actual building, and it all takes time. So Minister Kelly has been working at a structure which will report to him. He meets many of the managers on a weekly basis on how they're actually progressing the targets. We also have targets within that.
And the minimum we're saying is 35,000 by the next election.
Well, we also have targets in relation to, for instance, people being accommodated through social housing agencies. It's not simply all building by local authorities. There will be a variety of sources which will supply housing to people. Some of those have been very successful in Ireland in the past, but the scale has been small. So the key thing we have to do as a country is to actually increase and broaden the scale and increase the speed at which we do all of that. It's a very ambitious, and it's going to be very hard work by everybody involved to get there.
Finally, and briefly, as I said there, the Taoiseach Enda Kenny said that the next election would be a choice between Fine Gael and Sinn Féin, which obviously leaves the road open to, I suppose, a broad division of Irish politics along left-right lines. There was talk during the week of a Fianna Fáil Fine Gael coalition, which was being shot down by various people, but mooted by Simon Coveney. What's your own view on the Taoiseach's characterisation of the choice facing the Irish people at the next election between Fine Gael and Sinn Féin? Do you think it's helpful?
Just on Simon Coveney, Simon Coveney asked to meet me at the end of last week, and he and I sat down for an hour, and I just want to make this clear. He made it very clear to me in what he said that he actually highly values the Labour Party as a partner in government.
Well, but on the Taoiseach's choice.
What I want to say there is that, and I've said this on many occasions before, and even before I became leader of the Labour Party, this particular government was elected at a time when the country was in deep danger to repair and recover the country, and I want a social as well as an economic recovery. We have a year plus to go on that, and we have another budget to go in the autumn. I think it would be very wrong for both parties or either party in government to focus on anything other than what we have promised the electorate, which we would do, which is to have a further budget in the autumn for 2016 to actually cement down the recovery. After that, of course, we would be going to the country with our different policies, but we will be also able to set out the work that this government in a very strong partnership has achieved since it came to power.
Okay, Joan Burton, Taoiseach and Labour leader, thanks very much for joining us.